You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, we talk about whether Wisconsin could become a new hub for the gaming and technology industry.
First, the United States Supreme Court is playing a role in the upcoming presidential election. In February, Justice Antonin Scalia died, leaving a vacancy on the court that will probably persist until after the November election. President Barack Obama announced a nominee in March, but Senate Republicans have declined to consider him.
Pundits think elderly justices could retire, which means the next president would pick two or more new judges. The court is currently made up of four liberals and four conservatives, and the new justice could shift the court in either direction.
Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump recently brought the open Supreme Court seat up in a speech in North Carolina about the Second Amendment.
Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. By the way, and if she gets to pick... If she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know.
Barbara Perry joins us now to talk about how the vacancy on the court is playing into the presidential election. She's a professor of ethics and institutions and director of presidential studies at the University of Virginia's Miller Center. Barbara, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, it's always great to be with you, Rob and Veronica.
Well, let's start with those comments from Donald Trump. I mean, the Supreme Court appointments have come up a lot. This was probably the most prominent example because of the backlash, the reaction that one got.
Yes, I would say so. I've been following this issue about the Supreme Court and presidential campaigns for about 30 years, and if indeed one believes that Donald Trump was going down the assassination road, one never knows perhaps with him, but obviously some people took it that way. I can't recall another time when a candidate brought up the Supreme Court and then said, yes, it's a problem. If my opponent wins, he or she will get to appoint people to the Supreme Court, and there's nothing you can do about it, meaning there's no way to remove a justice except through impeachment and conviction, and then therefore we should assassinate my opponent. So I make light almost to keep from crying, but again, perhaps he didn't mean that, and I know that he tried to indicate that that's not what he meant. But it's a very rare instance of incendiary language about the Supreme Court and the opponent in this instance.
Turning to the wider issue, the Supreme Court appointment, though, it seems like I'm hearing a lot of arguments, Democrats saying, hey, Bernie Sanders supporters, even if you don't like anything else Hillary Clinton's doing, Supreme Court, you got to vote for her. And then the Never Trump movement, they're being told, well, you don't like Donald Trump, but you want Hillary Clinton appointing Supreme Court justices. Have you ever seen the issue of Supreme Court appointments being this front and center in a presidential race?
Yes, and in fact, there has been. Oftentimes, though, this is sort of the last resort, but a last resort this time around is more likely because the favorability, or should I say unfavorability ratings of these two candidates is so high. So it is the case then that I think as a last resort on both sides, people are saying, well, you may not like this candidate, but think of the Supreme Court. But this is certainly not the first time that the court has played a large, large role, front and center in some cases, in our elections. And we can go back, for example, in 1936, although FDR was about to try to implement his court packing plan, which he would do after his landslide victory in 1936 into 1937, and he didn't really bring up the court that much on the campaign trail. It was always in the background because the court kept striking down his New Deal legislation that Congress had passed through. So it really did become front and center in American politics. 1968, Richard Nixon, because of the liberal Earl Warren court, Earl Warren, of course, was Chief Justice from the 50s through the 60s, and had indicated that he was going to step down. The Republicans and Southern Democrats had filibustered Abe Fortas, who was the choice to replace him by Lyndon Johnson, so Earl Warren had to stay on in that position. So it was really clear in 1968 in that election that the changes were coming from the actual Chief Justice chair on down through the ranks of the associates. So Richard Nixon had an actual strategy, a Southern strategy, he called it, to try to really bring people on board who hated the Warren Court. I can remember as a kid seeing impeach Earl Warren signs and bumper stickers around the country. So that was another example. And then in the 80s, in 84 and 88, because we have a situation now that we had then, they call it the grain of the court. As the court ages, it obviously the actuarial imperative is such that there could be more seats open up, as did, sadly, with Justice Scalia this past February.
Talking to Barbara Perry from the University of Virginia, looking at Supreme Court politics in the presidential race. Barbara, one thing that seems a little less precedented, I guess, is there's a vacancy. There is a job opening on the Supreme Court. It's not being filled, and we've got candidates running, and we know, unless something happens, we can talk about that, unless something happens after the election in the lame duck Senate, they've got an appointment to make on day one.
Yes, this is highly unusual. In fact, I racked my brain over the weekend trying to think of times, at least in modern history, when this had happened. I had to go all the way back to 1956, so back 60 years. And in fact, this one was so fascinating because a justice, an associate justice, Sherman Minton, suddenly left in ill health in October of 1956, just a few weeks before the election. And the incumbent president, Eisenhower, who was running for re-election, of course, took a very interesting approach, and he made a recess appointment of Bill Brennan, William Brennan, to the court, which was then approved when the new Senate came back in the January of 1957. But that was the last time. But it was so close to the election, it almost didn't have an impact on it because people weren't thinking in those terms, where now people have had since February to be thinking about this open seat on the court.
Now, Barbara, to enrich my civics education here, you mentioned the phrase impeach Earl Warren. I am dimly aware that a Supreme Court justice could be impeached. What has to happen to make that happen?
Right. So that's the only way to remove a justice short of his or her own retirement or the Grim Reaper. And it is the same process for removing a president. So if people remember back to the impeachment hearings for both Richard Nixon and Bill Clinton, so it starts in the House. The House acts as sort of a grand jury. If they wish to go forward with articles of impeachment, that's like an indictment. Then it goes to the Senate, and the Senate acts as the trial court, if you will. Interestingly enough, with the Chief Justice presiding, if it is the president whose impeachment is on the line. So that is the way and the only way to remove any member of the federal judiciary, from U.S. District Court to Court of Appeals to the Supreme Court.
Is this something we do very often?
Not very often at all. I think the figure is about 16 lower federal court judges have been removed in our 240 years, so that's district court and court of appeals. And if I'm remembering correctly, back in the just after the founding era, Justice Chase, was impeached, but if I'm recalling my history correctly, was not convicted and therefore not removed from office. But it was certainly a shot across the bow of the court, to be sure.
Demographics have changed in the United States. People have longer life expectancies. Those people include Supreme Court justices. Is the sheer fact that we expect people to live and be productive longer, does that put more at stake on any individual appointment? If you appoint a 40-something court justice, they may be making critical decisions for 30, 40 years?
Absolutely, indeed, Rob. But I think about Justice Scalia, you know, passing away in February. He was about to mark 30 years on the bench because he had been appointed in his 50s by Ronald Reagan, who is long gone from this mortal coil. And here he was still on the bench, someone going back into our history like Chief Justice John Marshall, a Federalist appointed by John Adams in 1801, serves on the court until the 1830s. The Federalist Party doesn't even exist when he dies. So it is the case, and some presidents, particularly Ronald Reagan, fought very hard and long about wanting to put on younger members, people like Scalia in their 50s, knowing that they could, if they have good health, they could serve into their 80s, they could serve 30, 40, maybe even 50 years. The court right now has an average age of 71, but I should point out that Supreme Court justices rival only symphony orchestra conductors in terms of their longevity.
How big a role do you think Supreme Court appointments, this vacancy, maybe more to come, are going to play between now and November's voting day?
I think that it'll probably be a tertiary role. I don't think it'll be a primary role as it was, I would say, in those examples I've given of 1968, for example. So for some people, it may be a primary issue, but for probably most people, a secondary or a tertiary issue. But I say it may be this time around, ironically, because these two candidates have such high favorability ratings and are not viewed as trustworthy. Maybe the case that people say, well, I'm going to pick one over the other, and I'm going to solely base it on what kinds of people they would put on the Supreme Court.
Barbara, thanks so much for being with us today.
Great to be with you, Rob.
That's Barbara Perry, Professor of Ethics and Institutions and Director of Presidential Studies at the University of Virginia's Miller Center. She joined us to talk about how the vacancy on the U.S. Supreme Court is affecting presidential election politics.